Is the next step, as the president says, a healthcare implosion? From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. After all that, Obamacare remains the law of the land. President Trump's tweet this morning is now about watching Obamacare, quote, implode, then deal. Joining us from our health desk at WHYY is Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein. So, Dan, how might the White House let, even encourage, Obamacare to collapse?
Well, the president's taken this sort of tack for a long time, David. You know, one thing he can do right off the bat is make it clear he's not going to fund these payments that people have been talking about for a couple of months. This is money that helps low-income consumers cover out-of-pocket costs. The money ultimately goes to insurers, and it's worth about $7 to $8 billion. Right now, these payments are tied up in a lawsuit that dates back to the Obama administration. So far, President Trump has been making these payments monthly, and he could stop them. If that happens, it's almost certain more insurers are going to leave the exchanges, and premiums will probably be jacked up.
Now, early this morning, the Senate blocked a move to repeal the individual mandate. That's where people must buy insurance or face a penalty. But the president could give people the room not to buy insurance still?
Exactly. You know, one of President Trump's first acts in office was to sign an executive order sending a signal he might not really enforce the penalty or give people lots of flexibility. So he could direct federal agencies to lay off, and this would pretty much have the same effect as not making those subsidy payments we were just talking about, which would chase insurers away and lead to higher premiums. One thing right now is that there are only about 40 counties in the country that are also at risk of not having insurers sell plans on the exchanges. Under Obama, health officials worked hard to solve these sorts of problems. If Trump really wants to let this implode, David, he can just take a don't do anything approach.
All right. Now, is there any reason to think that after 7 months or so, we may see an effort to actually fix Obamacare instead of letting it fall apart?
Yeah, there actually is. Republican Senator Lamar Alexander has said he wants to hold hearings on how to stabilize the market, and a number of other lawmakers have said similar things. At the end of the day, what this would mean is more certainty and really more money for insurers. Congress could fund those out-of-pocket payments. They could also add money to help underwrite the cost of really sick patients. So there are some options. One reason to think something actually may happen is that where there are lots of problems, they're in the red patches of the country. And so Republicans may be motivated to do something.
Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein, thank you. Let's do some market numbers. Tech stocks already had a bad day going yesterday when Amazon's quarterly results disappointed. The retail giant is selling and investing like mad, but at the expense of profits. Amazon stock is down 3% in pre-market trading now. The NASDAQ future now down 1%. The S&P future is down 0.4%. This year, we've been focusing on what automation is doing for and doing to the American labor force. Forrester Research calculates that robots, algorithms, and automation in general will create 15 million jobs in the next decade, but destroy about 24 million, leading to a net loss of about 10 million jobs. But today, a countervailing view. I want to welcome Heidi Shierholz, senior economist and director of policy at the nonpartisan but progressive think tank, the Economic Policy Institute.
Thank you for having me.
So you and your team are not into this robots ate my job thing. It's not the problem. Why?
I am usually the most pessimistic person in the room, and I am not worried about the coming robot apocalypse. And the reason for that is that the footprints of automation being a problem are not showing up anywhere in the data.
Well, like what? You might be thinking, for instance, productivity.
Yeah. So productivity is where automation shows up in the data. And it used to take multiple people, many backbreaking hours to dig a ditch. Now it takes one person operating a hydraulic extractor. They can do it in an instant. So you can dig that same ditch in a lot less time. That's productivity growth. Over the last 10 years, we've seen remarkably weak productivity growth. In fact, we are at post-World War II lows with our productivity growth. So we are certainly not seeing a speed up of automation that might make someone concerned about automation displacing too many workers.
Now, no one knows you to be a Pollyanna person, and I know that you don't think that the labor force is in great shape. What should we then be worried about if not the technology threat?
it's a thing that we see over and over amongst economists, that they want to say that the trends we're seeing, like rising inequality, are actually a natural outgrowth of a modern economy due to something like automation or something else that is happening that we don't have control over. But really what we're seeing, what is causing our rising inequality, is deliberate policy choices, like allowing labor market standards to erode, like the minimum wage and overtime protections, seeing unionization fall.
Others would also add globalization done wrong.
Right. Another key factor in there is globalization that has prioritized corporate profits while consistently exposing our workers to fierce competition. Those are the things that are driving our stagnant wages, our rising inequality. It's not being caused by natural forces of automation.
So if Alexa or Siri start doing the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the NASDAQ every day and I lose my job to automation, I'm going to call you.
And I'll say, oh, there's another good job somewhere else for you.
Heidi Shierholz is a senior economist and director of policy at the Economic Policy Institute. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Robot-proof jobs, we call our ongoing coverage. If you go to marketplace.org/robotproof, my team and I have three podcasts waiting for you to explore all this. I also wrote a piece in the latest Popular Mechanics magazine featuring a guy who has, I argue, the most robot-proof job in America. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Stephanie Hughes produces Marketplace Tech. I'm David Brancaccio, the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.